Happy Friday, everyone. Thank you, all of you who are supporting Into the Word financially and keeping this program on this radio station. If there's anyone out there that likes to help in things like that, you can do so just by writing down the contact information you'll hear at the end of today's broadcast, and then you can send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it will be applied to the radio broadcast fees. Fridays, I like to urge every last one of you to not neglect the assembling together of the saints. All of you should have a home congregation, and all of you should be regularly getting together to worship and fellowship and pray and praise and serve and study and encourage each other to love and good deeds, just like the Scripture describes the local body of believers doing. If you do not have a home congregation, you need to quit dragging your feet. Go out there, do your research, find a place, join that body of believers, get plugged in, stay plugged in. If you are actively looking right now for such a place and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, please come check us out. Maybe we can be the place where you can settle down and call home. We are in Genesis chapter 33. We're going to start in verse 8. Such an emotional moment last time that we were studying. Jacob was so nervous, so scared and afraid about meeting his twin brother Esau. He wrestles all night with God on this matter, begging God to tell him it was all going to be okay, to bless him. And in the process, God gives Jacob a brand new name. He says, you're not going to be called heel grabber anymore. You're going to be called Yisrael, he who has striven with God and has survived and thrived from it. And so on the day of meeting Esau, Jacob bows himself down on the ground in front of him, but Esau comes and grabs him and hugs him and kisses him, and it is clear that it's all going to be okay, just like God said it would be, that it was okay to come home after 20 years away. And the emotional dam is broken, and tears flow. And introductions are made. And this family gets to start knowing each other. And it's just a wonderful time. There on the Yabuk River, just a little bit east of where it flows into the Jordan. The next thing that happens is related to what Jacob had done the day before, hoping to calm Esau down before he arrived at Mahanaim, the two encampments. And that was sending him this huge, expensive gift, or I guess we should say gifts of animals, you know, drove after drove after drove of breeding stock that would now belong to Esau as a way of saying, I'm sorry that I stepped in and heel grabbed you, leg pulled you out of the way in regard to inheritance, in regard to material possessions. And so Esau, now here on the day of their meeting, says this, verse 8 of chapter 33. Esau said, what do you mean by all this company that I met? And Jacob answered, to find favor in the sight of my Lord. Notice again, he's still using this terminology to emphasize, you are the senior of the two of us. It's only a few seconds, but it matters in formality. You are the senior, I am the junior, and I want to make things up, to find favor in the sight of my Lord. Verse 9, But Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And this is where we remind ourselves that Esau, over the last 20 years, has become very wealthy himself. He's been probably running his father's sheep and herds for him and taking a cut of that for his work. But it's not just there. He's also been running animals and doing things for his father-in-law down at Mount Seir and making wealth for himself that way. And so he is probably just about as wealthy as Jacob. And so that's why he says, I have enough, brother. You can just keep that stuff. I don't need it. Jacob said, no, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. So I don't care if you don't need it. I want you to have it. The in-between line evidence here is that he is basically apologizing. He is saying, I want to make up for what I did when I heel grabbed you, when I pulled you off to the side, tricked Dad into giving me the blessing, and didn't even think about, you know, you and me. It was all about me. And so, no, please, if I found favor in your sight, accept my present from my hand. Listen to these words. For I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God, and you've accepted me. Now, remember, they are right next to Penuel, face of God, the place where Jacob wrestled with God himself last night. And so he's saying, Esau, I'm telling you, just the fact that I can look you in the eye right now and see you smile back at me and accept me in your presence without any threat of violence, it's like me seeing God and being accepted in his presence. It's a big deal. Just take the stuff. Please accept my blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. So Jacob just kind of repeats back Esau's words. I'm the one that has more than enough. Please take it as my way of saying I'm sorry. And I'm so glad that we're back together again. And so, thus he urged him, and he took it. And so now the two brothers are fully reconciled. Esau said, let us journey on our way, and I'll go ahead of you. So he wants to kind of help escort him the rest of the journey. Now, he's anticipating more than likely that Jacob wants to go and see Dad and Mom, and then maybe come down and see what Esau's been up to in Mount Seir. He wants to show off his stuff. So that's probably what Esau is assuming, is that Jacob wants to go all the way deep down into Canaan. But Jacob has something else in mind here. Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are frail. It's not that they're sickly. Some of them are pretty young. Remember, the eldest among the boys is Reuben. He's 12. The youngest two are Dinah, who's probably about 7, and Joseph, who's about 6. So everybody is elementary school or middle schoolers. That's their age. And so he says, the children are frail, and the nursing flocks and herds are a care to me. So he's got babies with the animals too. If they are driven hard for one day, all the flocks will die. Now, you remember that I said in the first part of this story of leaving Haran and heading back to Canaan, those first 11 days, Jacob was really pushing those animals hard because we know the mileage from a little bit south of Haran down to where we approximate that Gilead camp is. In order to get that distance, you have to average 30-plus miles a day. And that's a hard pace for the animals. But now that he's not having to worry about Laban, because that's been resolved, and he doesn't have to worry about Esau, because that's been resolved, he can take his time. He can slow everything down and think only about the animals. So let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant. You go back, and I will lead on slowly at the pace of the livestock that are ahead of me and at the pace of the children until I come to my Lord in Seir. Now, let me explain that Jacob is not saying that he's coming with everything to Seir, because that's not his plan. He's basically saying, let me take care of all my animals the way I need to take care of them, and eventually, once everything's settled, I'll make that visit to Seir. And I'm sure he would also make the visit to wherever it is that his father and his mother encamped right now, maybe Hebron or Beersheba or Beer Lahairoi or someplace like that. So Esau said, okay, let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. So of the 400 guys that he brought with him, he says, let me leave a few of them, you know, as kind of a security team. Maybe as a team to help them watch out for some of the hazards of the region. Remember, Jacob's been out of the area for 20 years, and so things may have changed a little bit geographically, you know, big sinkholes, maybe places where wild animals are a little bit more dangerous. Maybe we've got places where some marauders are known to be operating. So Esau is trying to be helpful. He's saying, let me leave some of my local guys with you to help you out until you can come and visit me. But he said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. Meaning, I don't think I'll need him. Thank you for the offer. And so, eventually, Esau returned that day on his way back to Seir. So he turns around, heads back home again. And it's a few days' travel down to the bottom of the, down to the south end of the Dead Sea, and then a little bit to the south east of there. But Jacob does now his plan for taking care of his animals. And I think we should understand some considerations here. Before Jacob left 20 years ago, his father, Yitzhak, had the most animals, was the richest person in the southern part of the Middle East. And in order to take care of his animals, he has to kind of spread them out over a big region. His keepers of those animals have to keep them moving around so that they don't overgraze. So that's a big area around Hebron and Beersheba and Beer Lahairoi. Esau is also a very wealthy man, and he's over to the southeast a little ways, a couple of days' travel from his father, and he's running animals all over the place there. So Jacob would not be wise in bringing his great big bunch of animals into either of those two areas, because they're already jam-packed with the wealth of his father and his brother. So he makes the choice to stay a little bit to the north, verse 17. Jacob journeyed to Sukkot, and he built himself a house and made booths for his livestock. And therefore, the name of the place is called Sukkot. Now, the Israelis reading this knew where Sukkot was. It's somewhere near the confluence, the joining together of the Yabuk and Jordan rivers. It would be a little bit south of that confluence and probably on the east side of the Jordan, but it's down in the Jordan Valley. It didn't have this name until Jacob settled there. Now, what does he do? He basically sets up a cattle ranch operation. He builds a house for himself whenever he's actively working with his livestock, his cattle, and he makes corrals. When we hear the word Sukkot here, in most other places in the Old Testament, it tends to be about the Feast of Tabernacles, which has the idea of a lean-to, a wooden lean-to structure with kind of cross beams across the top, but you can see the stars through whatever you put across the top, like palm fronds or something like that. It was the Feast of Tabernacles that reminded the Israeli people that they had to live out outside of stick-built homes or rock-built homes for 40 years in the wilderness during their exodus. So Sukkot is not about those type of constructions. It's actually about corrals, places where you kind of keep your livestock fenced in, maybe a little lean-to shed here and there so that they can get in out of the sun. So he basically sets himself up a cattle ranch down in the Jordan Valley where the cows can be herded back and forth and here and there and then be taken care of at the ranch house. And that's why he gives it the name Sukkot. But he leaves there with his sheep and his goats to take them to a better grazing place. So Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way from Paddan Aram, and he camped before the city. Now, where the Yabuk comes into the Jordan, that's from the east side. Roughly around that same area, there's another water system, a little drainage system, that comes in from the west side. And if you follow that little water system, it's actually northwestward a little bit, up into the hills of Canaan, you will eventually, along one of the branches of that water system, come to the little city of Shechem. And Shechem means shoulders. And the way it got its name is that this town is located between two prominent mountains or hills, Gerizim and Ebal. Shechem is right between those is right between the shoulders formed by those two hills. It is a Canaanite city. Now, don't think of it as being a monstrous city. It's probably several hundred people living together inside the walls of this city. But it is surrounded by lots of good grazing land. And so Jacob decides this would be a great place for my sheep and goat operation. And verse number 19 says, from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father. Now, Shechem, the young man, is named after the city, more than likely. Or possibly the city is brand new and named after the baby boy. maybe. But Hamor is kind of the head of the city here. And Shechem is his son. And so he's going to come into the story in a little bit. So Jacob bought for 100 pieces of money, so 100 bits of silver, and we don't know how big these bits are. It's possible they might end up being the equivalent of the shekels later, but it's 100 pieces of silver. He buys the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. So he basically leases this piece of property next to the city of Shechem, where he can set up his little tent city. And verse 20, there he erected an altar. So you can tell from that he plans on sticking around here for a while because he's setting up a worship site. And he called it El Elohe, Elohe Yisrael, which is Hebrew dialect for God, the God of Yisrael, which is his brand new name, right? So he is dedicating his campsite to the God that gave him a brand new name. And for the next 10 years, probably, he carries on sheep operations, goat operations, up here next to Shechem, the city of Shechem, and carries on the cattle operations down in the valley, about a day's travel down into the Jordan Valley from Shechem, at Sukkot. And he just builds wealth, carries on life. From time to time, he probably goes down and checks up on mom and dad, goes down, visits with his brother. But this is where he lives for the next 10 years. Now, it doesn't say that in the text, so why am I saying it with such confidence? Because of the chronology we've been following. We know that he arrived in Canaan at Sukkot and at Shechem when his kids range in age from 12 as the oldest, that'd be Reuben, to Joseph the youngest at 6. And the next one up from Joseph was sister Dina, who must have been about 7. And the next story is about Dina getting married. And she is not going to be getting married at 7 years of age. And the next story after Dina's story is Joseph being sold into slavery in Egypt when he is 17. And so Dina would have been 18 at that time of the Joseph story. So that is why I say with confidence about 10 years pass between verse 20 at the end of chapter 33 and verse 1 of chapter 34. So verse 1 of chapter 34 says this. Now Dina, the daughter of Leah, she's the senior wife, remember, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. So by my suggestion, which I think is quite reasonable, Dina has basically grown up at Shechem. She went from being a little girl of 7 up to being a young woman of probably 16 or 17. And she goes to town to see all the other ladies with all their finery, to see how things are going on. And while she's in town, surprise, surprise, she meets a young man. And his name is Shechem. Remember, we were told that he and the city share the name. He is the son of the guy that runs the town. when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, Hivite is just a form of Canaanite. It's one of the clans. The prince of the land, meaning he's the guy that will be running things eventually here after his father passes away. So he's very prominent. When he saw her, and this is where I am going to have to object to our English Standard Version and almost all the other versions here. It says, he seized her. Now, the word seize in our English language has an intimation of force. In the Hebrew, as well as in the Greek, the wording that is used is much more neutral. Let me read it as that. He saw her and he took her. Now, it's the idea that he took her by the hand, kind of. And we know, of course, that you can take someone's hand without it being violent. And so I'm going to just tell you ahead of time, before we get much farther here, I don't believe that this is a rape situation, like a lot of the commentaries do and a lot of the preachers do when they tell this story. No, I don't believe that language upholds that. I believe this is a teenage love story. But it is a teenage love story where, as so often happens, the teenagers get the cart before the horse, meaning they don't go through the procedures of getting engaged and wait until they get married to have sexual activity. They just have sexual activity. And so I want you to mark your place right here, and we will come back and tell the story of Dinah and Shechem the next time we get into the Word.